Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
Dudley Dough, a fair wage pizza parlor dedicated to economic justice in Boston.
Praise. I mean,
they have to use quotation marks around these things in order to be clear to everybody. It's been forced to close its doors because it's unable to make enough profits, according to the Boston Globe. That sounds fair, doesn't it? Because it's fair that the employees get paid a bunch of money, but the owner can't keep the doors open.
Hmm.
Now, anyway, it's completely up to people how they want to run their business, but this amuses me.
Well, the employees aren't making any money anymore.
They got fired.
No. Mm-hmm. That doesn't seem fair. It doesn't seem fair that they have to go and figure out life on their own now
that's
they're not getting...
That's not right.
Yeah. I tried to figure out what a fair wage was, and I went around to...
You did, or the owner of this place?
I did.
Oh, okay.
The owner of this place, I presume, decides what fair is. Fair is just arbitrary, right? Unless you're using the ideas of the principles of liberty, fair is just arbitrary.
It's economic justice.
That's right. It's justice. Justice for all these people whose pictures are on this website. It's great. I'm trying to speak for the small business owner, which is to say, if you own a pizza place... One of the reasons you pay what you pay is you can barely keep your head above water. None of these people are making huge, gigantic fortunes in what they're doing.
Oh, some of them do pretty well.
Yeah, that means Papa John did fine, but he can't make his business run by giving quote-unquote fair wages, whatever those might be. I can't figure out what they are.
I'm looking at the Boston Globe piece, and it doesn't mention it.
They don't want to tell you what a fair wage is, but, you know, $15-$20 an hour is what my guess is. They're in Boston, so it has to be...
I thought that was a living wage. Normally, that's the terminology that goes along with 15.
Yeah, that would be
a
subsistence wage in Boston.
Maybe fair is like $12. I don't know.
No, I would say fair should be higher than
fair should be higher than living
than a subsistence wage. Okay. Yeah,
you can't run anything in Boston and pay $12 an hour.
Okay, I don't know. I don't go to Boston.
I mean, 12 is now the minimum up here. It's like
no, it's not. New Hampshire doesn't have a minimum wage, but
in terms of what the market will bear.
Oh, I see.
Yes, there's a point where the market will bear. There is a minimum wage. It's just set by the marketplace.
There's nothing wrong with that idea. There's nothing wrong with the idea of an employee-owned business or whatever. I'm not saying this was employee-owned, but it was run by this nonprofit. But to try different organizational methods, that makes sense. But you're still... You know, you still have to get over the problem of year number one of running a restaurant. And anybody that, you know, is somewhat aware of the restaurant industry, and I've never worked in it, but I've known people, you know, close to me who have, and it's pretty much a known fact that you don't make it through the first year if you're 80% of restaurants. You just go out of business. And most businesses, restaurants included, the owner's not taking any profits in year number one.
The average small business owner in the first 3 years pays themselves less than $5 an hour.
If they get anything at all.
Yeah.
I mean, again, you're talking about the restaurant industry, very high competition. In a city like Boston, you know, there are, I don't know how many, hundreds probably of restaurants out there.
Highly competitive.
Probably dozens and dozens of pizza parlors. Probably more than one pizza parlor on the very same block. I would guess, of wherever this was. So, you know, there's a lot of competition, which means that the amount that you can make, especially in your first year where you're paying back loans that you might have received in order to open the business, or you're trying to pay them back while at the same time paying your staff, it's not an easy thing to do.
Three other restaurants opened in the area around the same time as Dudley Dough.
Uh-oh.
All still are operating, according to the Boston Globe.
Really?
Yep. The irony is that Dudley Dough's mission statement of economic justice is for its employees who will no longer be employed. Not only will they no longer earn a fair wage, and you did figure out what that fair wage was.
I pulled up an old video. It's actually on the Haley House website. This is the nonprofit that runs Dudley Dough, and they have it WGBH, which is one of the Boston television stations. They had a feature that was about the Dudley Dough back from 2015 when it started. And that's when they announced that it was going to be a starting wage of $12.50, but they were hoping to make that $15. I wonder if they ever made it there.
I don't know. $12.50 is probably just your probationary starting wage, too.
I think that was their intention to pay their employees that in the beginning, but that they would hope that the business would be successful enough to make it 15. So my question is, did they actually ever end up getting a raise? Last year, apparently the owner of the Patriots gave this, again, nonprofit pizza place that was supposedly going to pay a fair wage, is what they called it, and they started at $12.50. They are now going out of business at the end of this year, and that's with a $100,000 subsidy.
What I want to know is, who owns the building that the restaurant was in?
Good question. Is it Haley House?
Is it Haley House? How much was Haley House charging Dudley Doe for rent?
Well, why would they charge their own thing? You know, it's their project.
That's where the real profit is.
I mean, if they're a nonprofit organization, then they're not searching for profit, though.
No, but they can use a profit on another entity they own to fund other projects that they have.
Sure.
Well, they'd certainly make this whole economic justice and fair wage thing look ridiculous by letting their 2-year-old pizza shop open for this very purpose fail right there in front of them.
I would say that's kind of embarrassing for the whole the causa.
Especially with a $100,000 subsidy. I mean,
Luther Pinckney, team leader at Dudley Doe, says, "I don't think anyone's looking at this as a failure." But Pinckney's statement contradicts those who relied on their jobs. "I didn't see it coming. I have to keep working. I've got my youngest son in private school," said Dudley Doe employee Royce Terrell.
This is the whole thing with the living wage and the minimum wage and so forth, is that you give people the ability to break down barriers by giving them their first job in a training wage so they can gain experience and build a work ethic and have references, so when they move on to another job, they're prepared to work productively to earn that higher wage.
That's why, I think you're exactly right. We should call minimum wage training wage, because that's what I got paid. You know, I can't remember the last time I got minimum wage. It must have been when I was 15 years old. And I worked at a little comic book store in Bradenton, Florida. We sold magazines and Dungeons and Dragons games and all kinds of role-playing games and stuff like that. And, you know, what it taught me was to show up at work on time, how to treat customers, you know, those kind of things, how to keep a place looking good, the kind of stuff you need to know that you may not know just being some teenager living with your parents.
I just wanted to agree with Sarah from Albuquerque. We've got a Democratic mayor, and we haven't had a pedestrian fatality in years.
You're referring to
you aren't aiming at that mayor closely enough.
You're referring to our caller Sarah, who regularly calls in our third hour of the show. She called last night to suggest that, I think it was last night, she was suggesting that because there's a Republican mayor is why there have been traffic fatalities that have gone up, and she claims that, I think, violent crime has gone up. She believes that all that's going to change if there's a Democratic mayor
because drivers are annoyed and they keep seeing people they think are the mayor and they keep going for
them. That's funny, Justin. Anything else you want to share tonight?
Yeah, I just had a quick question about cashing out Bitcoin. I've been interested in investing in Bitcoin, but not sure how I would cash out if I use it as an investment vehicle.
Yeah, it's a great question. So there are different ways that you can do this. One way, if you are, let's say, looking for anonymity around cashing out, like you literally want to get cash, is you could go to localbitcoins.com, and sometimes there are people there who will meet you at a location and give you cash for your Bitcoins.
If you want to trade your Bitcoins for dollars and you don't mind working with Coinbase, what you can do, they have an exchange called GDAX, G-D-A-X. And if you put your Bitcoins on GDAX and you sell it in what's called a limit order, not a market order, you can sell it for no fee whatsoever.
Really?
Yeah.
And
then, so that'll convert it to dollars, and then you can send the dollars to your bank account, your PayPal, or whatever, and they'll have some fee for that wire transfer fee.
Huh.
But it's like usually like $10, no matter, you know, how big it is and that sort of thing.
Wow, I didn't realize they were doing no fee. over there. For
it,
limit. They,
it encourages people to do limit orders rather than market orders. So the people that are, you know, want to sell or buy immediately on the market price, they're the ones paying the transaction fee on the transaction. Mm-hmm. And so the person selling doesn't.
Cool. That's good to know. So, yeah. So those are a couple of options. I know BitPay, for instance, is another option you'll want to consider. And I think Coinbase has a competitor, but it's not available in all states. A Bitcoin debit card. In most businesses, there's the money the owner makes. There's the money paid to the employees. And then there's, you know, the costs, the other costs of doing business, the rent and the overhead of the product that you're buying, and et cetera. And so they said, well, we were going to get rid of the owner's profit and then take whatever profit the business would have made and distribute it amongst the employees on a quarterly basis. So they would divvy it up based on how many hours each employee worked would be their kind of their share of that bonus. In theory, that was the idea. Whether that ever happened is not clear, right? The postmortems here in the media that are coming out now obviously don't go and delve into the business details. They're just announcing how sad it is that this grand social experiment and so-called social justice,
economic justice and fair wages,
that it has failed. And, you know, there's really, they're not giving us any real details on this. So one of the questions I had was the $12.50 starting pay that they had announced back in 2015. They had intended to pay people more. Were they ever able to do that? Did they ever distribute any of these so-called profits? Because as I said last hour, your typical restaurant isn't making any money year number one. They're just lucky. Your average restaurant, if they make it through year number one, is lucky to make it through year number one.
What a wonderful day of news today to hear that a couple of the liars and cheats and stealers are going to be nailed to the cross.
Who's getting nailed to the cross?
The uranium deal investigations going on.
Yeah, we got that in show prep.
That's kind of appropriate for a guy from Hanford, Washington, talking about the uranium deal. I mean,
Heck yeah.
What uranium deal?
What
are
do you guys
about?
Know about Hanford that I don't?
Well, Hanford is where the U.S. nuclear reservation is,
and
the high school there.
We grow the largest vegetables in the nation here.
Yeah,
too.
radiation fertilized, and the high school there for decades. Their team is the Hanford Bombers, and their team mascot is a big mushroom cloud.
No god.
I've got a shirt. I have got a Bombers shirt. And I call them the Bombers.
Bombers.
So
Bombers.
What's this uranium thing? I'm sorry, I don't know what the story is.
Anyway, this whole uranium deal, Hillary and the Russians and somebody else, or probably Billy too, they all made this deal to sell 20% of our uranium stockpile to Russia.
Here's the video from the website of Dudley House, or excuse me, Haley House. It was Dudley Dough was the name of the pizza place. But at the very bottom, they have their kind of their pitch video. This is what, I doubt this aired on any television station, but this is their video from Vimeo.com. And let's play it to find out a little bit about Dudley Dough.
There'll be no mistaking when you go into Dudley Dough what our goals are. We'll have our mission up on the wall. We have a.
You're right, Mark. Right. You said the mission would be right up front, right on the front of the menu, and you know, that's not a bad thing necessarily. They're really proud of their idea, and
well,
they wanted people
to know. If you take a look at what happened sort of early on, they're not selling pizza. They're selling an idea.
And the idea, yeah.
The idea is economic justice and a fair wage. Now, what they call a fair wage is $12.50 an hour in Boston, Massachusetts.
It doesn't sound hard to get.
No, it doesn't sound, if fair is anything different than going wage, then I'd be very surprised. You can find $12.50 an hour here in Keene, New Hampshire as a starting wage.
Depending on where, but that's possible.
Yeah, depending on where. Yeah. I mean, I drive down the road. They have signs out on little, what do they call those when they can change out the letters?
Marquee.
On the little marquees, the little crappy marquees that say, now hiring this much an hour.
If you can't sell pizza in America, America, you're failing hard.
Right. I mean, there are people that, there are people that have just gotten off the boat from foreign countries that can come here, make a pizza, sell it to Americans, and feed their family on this stuff.
Well, again, like I said, there's nothing wrong with the idea of trying to pay people more or dividing up profits among employees. I mean, there are employee-owned businesses that do very well. Publix is a good example
of that. There's something darn wrong with calling it fair, though. Okay?
Okay, I didn't say that.
When you open up a business, and the first three people you hire, are those people going to be broke? Is their rent not going to be paid when you can't make wages? When for 3 years you're trying to make enough money to survive, you've got to pay them right off the bat. Sure. Nobody ever says anything about what it's like for the small business person setting up a pizza joint.
They're struggling, for sure. There's
something wrong with not understanding economics.
Mike, you've pulled up the menu, which is still available online. What is it that they are going to see, besides the mission statement, which we've already gotten into, but what's the food like?
You get to pick from a grand total of five different styles of pizza.
Five. Okay.
One is their signature margherita pizza, which is a smoky tomato sauce topped with house-pulled mozzarella, Asiago, and snips of basil leaves.
Margherita pizza, I've heard of that one.
Wait a second, what? Is that all?
That's all.
What?
It's healthy. It's organic. Jeez,
what
it's non-GMO.
Okay, I got basil leaves and Asiago cheese and what?
There was sauce.
Sauce?
Sauce, and that's it.
Oh.
I've had a margherita pizza before.
That's a cheese pizza with leaves on it, Ian.
Yeah. The next one is the shrimp and corn with puttanesca.
I'm not sure what puttanesca is, but I know what shrimp and corn is, and I'd prefer not to have them on.
Not
I prefer
on a pizza.
Them in my chowder, yeah. Not on my pizza.
Puttanesca is a zesty anchovy tomato sauce. I actually loved anchovy, so I might like that.
Yep.
There is a mashed potato and meatloaf with corn capers and bechamel pizza.
That is not a pizza.
I'm willing to give it a try.
I mean, I like capers, but...
mashed potatoes, I like those too.
Yeah. This is shepherd's pie on dough.
That's what it
sounds like. Yeah.
I'm willing to give it a shot.
The fourth one is curried vegetable with lentils. So Jamaican stew with seasonal vegetables and earthy lentils.
They didn't make this with me in mind.
Up here in New Hampshire, there's a company by the name of Hypertherm in Lebanon. It is an employee-owned company. They are the world leader in plasma cutting machines. And they're very profitable, and I can say that getting a job at Hypertherm for people in that area who may not have a college degree, but if you're a blue collar, getting a job at Hypertherm is like winning the lottery, because the bonuses that they get at Christmas time can be rather stupendous.
Wow.
I'm certain that's true. With an employee-owned business, it's not about what happens with the money. It's about who makes the decisions. And this is the really difficult part, is that running a business means that sometimes you've got to say, no, it's not going to go the way you want it to go. It's going to go the way I say it's going to go. And if you don't like it, there's the door. Because you get, If their ideas were so awesome, they'd probably have their own successful business.
The ones that are most successful are the ones that most act like real corporations.
Yeah.
We'll talk a little bit about what Mike brought in to discuss tonight, the Trive concept, the idea of crowdsourcing fake news, meaning figuring out what is fake based on the wisdom of crowds.
Yeah, Trive is, the word comes from Truth Archive. So using the blockchain as a way to archive and fact check what's true and what's not. And, no matter what side of politics you're on, the big word term in politics right now is fake news.
Fake news.
And you're fake news. No, you're fake news, and back and forth. And everybody thinks they know what the truth is, and everybody else thinks they're wrong. And how do you know for truth?
How is this concept that you're talking about here, Trive.news, how is it going to figure it out? I mean, isn't it just going to be a bunch of people, throwing eggs at one another online, saying your news is fake, your news is fake?
No. It's you've probably seen people debating facts on Wikipedia or on Snopes.com and other fact-checking websites. But what's going on with Trive is they're trying to incentivize the discovery of truth and creating an adversarial Nash-type competition.
I wanted to talk about Randall Lord. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Randall Lord? No.
Okay, then I guess it's an important call. You've heard of Morpheus Titania, the nickname for the Arizona Bitcoiner who was locked up over Bitcoin.
Well, they raided him purportedly over Bitcoin, and during the raid they found they raided him purportedly over some sort of deals that he did through localbitcoins.com. But they found ammunition in his house, allegedly, and he is a felon, so they charged him with and arrested him right there for felon in possession of ammunition.
Yeah, I didn't know that that was a crime.
Apparently it is.
Yeah.
And anyway, that's what the arrest was for, but I guess the investigation is ongoing. Dave, you've been following the Morpheus Titania case very closely. What's the latest?
The subsequent charges were, I guess, operating an unlicensed money transmitting business.
Mm. Okay,
but anyway, I wasn't calling to talk about him. I don't have an update on him. But Randall Lord is the other situation that actually is getting less attention. But Lord is he was a Libertarian Party candidate, probably if I recall it was for Congress. It might have been for Senate in Louisiana. And is pretty well backed by the Libertarian Party. He's very genteel, soft-spoken, credible-sounding individual. I've seen him interviewed, a few times. But he was locked up, I think, on similar charges. Lord got, I think, a sentence of around 4 years. His son got more.
Oh, wow. What, did he take a guilty plea?
I think they both did reach some kind of a plea agreement. They, it seemed like their lawyer was more sanguine at first than what actually happened. It seemed like it was one of those things where the horror story just got worse and worse every day that Lord got into it after he was first approached by authorities. And again, like so many cases, why didn't any of them get video of these people coming to their door and questioning them, right? It's just like it all happened so in the dark.
Because these people, I mean, you said he was an activist with the Libertarian Party, so that, yeah, he has even less of an excuse as far as not getting the video. And if all it was questioning, then yeah, he certainly should have been able to get video of that. It's another thing if the cops bust into your door and you can't get to your phone in time to start the video recording. But if you've got the leisure of being able to do that, then you really ought to. Of course, answering the cops' questions is also generally a terrible idea.
Isn't Louisiana rather known for going after people for trying to film their interactions with police?
I don't know. Wouldn't surprise me, though. I was looking at a little bit more about the Randall Lord case that Dave Ridley had just called in about, saying that he was a Bitcoin trader on localbitcoins.com and that the federal government went after him. He took a guilty plea, apparently. And according to a Reddit thread, now, again, that may or may not be accurate, but one of the guys on the Reddit thread here says that this guy, Lord, was also allegedly selling research chemicals. The suggestion being that if he wasn't selling research chemicals, they wouldn't have been investigating him at all or going after him for just simply selling Bitcoin. But that's, again, just what somebody said on a Reddit thread. I don't know what level of truth there is.
So research chemicals, is this like fake marijuana and fake LSD stuff?
That would be that kind of stuff. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I think people should be able to sell it. I think you should really, really, really think twice before putting that stuff in your body.
I proved my point that photography is not a crime, and I paid the price for it, almost getting killed on at least two occasions because I refused to back down to unlawful orders. But now it's time to move on. And he says, my question to you is, when did you first come across the site and what did you learn from it? So that's him saying goodbye, calling it quits, throwing in the towel on one of the most, I would say, influential, one of the most important journalistic websites to shine light on the bad behavior of the police across the United States. Carlos Miller and Photography is Not a Crime. I love the guy. He's great. We had the chance to meet him when he came up here to New Hampshire.
Two times.
Was it twice?
I think so.
Well, he's in Derek J's Victimless Crime Spree, which is the movie that I produced when one of the times he was here. He went up and challenged the court security and their ridiculous camera bans there. And that was the same day that Derek and I got arrested out at the courthouse. And all of this was documented in Derek J's Victimless Crime Spree. But man, so sad to hear about an organization like this having internal strife. Having a spat within an organization, and then, you know, what he was talking about, having somebody steal a Twitter account, steal a Facebook account, somebody who was obviously trusted for a time, given the keys to the kingdom, so
to speak.
He
didn't make the accusation that that guy had anything to do with the Facebook page being hacked, but it was kind of an implication.
One of the sites that over the years here on Free Talk Live, we've probably used more memorably than many others. I mean, certainly there's a lot of mainstream media out there, but they don't report on things like Carlos Miller did over at Photography Is Not a Crime. Carlos would frequently provide content that you just couldn't find anywhere else. Much of it was original, was created by Carlos or some of the other bloggers there at Photography Is Not a Crime, where they would reveal just absolutely outrageous video of how police were treating videographers and photographers in so many different circumstances. And all of it's still there. The website is for sale. So if you have loved Photography Is Not a Crime and you want to pick up the baton, pick up the torch, so to speak, and, you know, keep running with it, then I'm sure Carlos would love to hear from you with any kind of offer on purchasing the site from him. But, you know, even if you were just to keep it alive and keep the archival content there, that would be something. To have a site like that disappear from the internet would be a truly tragic loss. I mean, it's one thing to lose a Facebook page. Okay, whatever. It's another thing to lose the decades worth of content and detailed content, video content that you can find over at photographyisnotacrime.com. But one of the tricky parts about being being a doer, being an instigator, being a leader like Carlos is when the time comes to pass the torch, sometimes nobody wants to take it from you.
When people get together and they're going to, you know, have some kind of business or interest or whatever, it's all roses and rainbows early on, because everybody thinks they're going to make some money. And then when, you know, the rubber hits the road and you realize, well, this isn't making the kind of money we were expecting, and projections aren't hitting, you know, we're not anywhere near our projections, and it's going to take years at steady growth, and we're having setbacks, and, you know, all these things that happen over and over again, it gets hard. I mean, you know, Facebook changes its algorithm and you're not getting the views that you once did. If you've got a... Mm-hmm. And I don't know what Photography
or
is
the YouTubers. They're complaining about the same thing right now.
They're YouTubers getting demonetized.
The YouTubers built their platform, had to build their business on a platform that they don't control.
Right.
And then when things changed, you either went to Patreon or you're dead. And that's basically how it goes.
That's why I hate the whole walled garden business model. And, you know, my own experience dealing with Second Life in that way is that, you know, they're a sole source. They, you know, sure, they own it. It's their property and they can do what they want with it. But, you know, they entice people to come in with all of these offers of, you can, you know, it's your content, you build it, it's your world, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And then they slowly change the terms of service over time. And someday you wake up and it's no longer yours, it's all theirs. Mm. And if you object to it, poof, you're gone.
Yep. Well, we said we could do that. It was in line 175 of the terms of service that you agreed to.
My sister, she put an iPhone 6 on Craigslist for sale. And, you know, people get you into conversations to try to get information from you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then, you know, before you know it, they, you know, somehow either got into your account or, ooh, you know, one of the other biggest things is that if you go into where it's, like if they're looking for, like, men looking for women or women looking for men or rants and raves, you know, they steal your pictures, you know, they, you know, have your email address, and they'll go and they'll post somewhere else in another state to try to con somebody else.
As though they were you.
Oh,
is what you're saying.
As they were me, exactly.
There's a lot of that happening on Craigslist. When I moved recently in August, and when I was shopping for places to move to, I was looking on Zillow and Craigslist and so forth. And there's this phenomenon on Craigslist with the real estate listings that if you list your apartment for rent or home for rent or whatever, it's likely that a scammer is going to copy your listing and offer it at a lower rent. And so people respond to them instead of you.
Yep.
And then they talk the people into giving them deposits.
Right. Oh, yeah, I'll send you the key.
Yeah. And so then
somebody
they
was
show
just saying
up
this the other night on the
at
show.
Your building expecting to have a lease. And it's like, not with me.
Who are you? Don't.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.